The Medical Alley podcast is brought to you by MentorMate. Custom software needs vary significantly. Whether you're powering a medical device, overhauling your back-end architecture, or reimagining your patient experience, MentorMate can help. Harnessing the technical excellence of Bulgaria, MentorMate provides end-to-end software services in all sectors of healthcare. With deep expertise in design, development, cloud, and software support, MentorMate helps healthcare clients administer world-class care through technology. Learn more at MentorMate.com. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening to everyone out there in Medical Alley. Thank you for joining us at another Medical Alley podcast. I'm so pleased today that we're going to get to talk about the UK market and opportunities for bringing medical technology into the UK market. I'm joined by a wonderful guest, a friend of Medical Alley, a friend of the Medical Alley community. Michael, would you mind introduce yourself and introduce Device Access for the listeners?
Yeah, sure. Thanks, Frank, and absolute pleasure to be invited to participate in this. So I'm Mike Brannigan-Harris. I'm the CEO of Device Access UK. We're based in southern England, and our goals are to help get great technologies to patients faster. And for the past 11 years, we've worked with a lot of Minneapolis-based companies. We're absolutely, it's such a pleasure to be working in such a great community with such great technology. So again, we want to get great tech to patients faster, and we have a great team of people. We've helped over 45 companies through NICE evaluations in that time. Nobody else has done anything close to that. My background, interestingly, is in medical devices going back to 1989. And I started selling wind dressings and ended up introducing robotic surgery, endovascular grafts, lots of endolaparoscopic things. And from 2005 to 2009, I ran Venus Medical Technologies, which was the subsidiary of Venus Inc. based in San Francisco, San Jose. And that was a huge success story where I introduced a great technology for treating varicose veins. And luckily, that whole adventure working with that company led me into understanding the customer, understanding our NHS customer in a very deep way, understanding reimbursement. And that led me, as my mission was to make my sales team as job as simple as possible to get sales and grow a great business, that led me into some early engagement with NICE at the time that they were relaunching their medical devices program. So I was very lucky to be involved at that time. And then soon after all that happened, the company Venus got sold to Covidien, and a year later I set Device Access up. So that's sort of history of us and me.
Thank you. And I really appreciate you sharing that, because the experience you have actually being on the device company side, having to commercialize the products in the UK, you bring that knowledge and experience to your clients. I want to talk about, you mentioned NICE. Can you talk a little bit about, for our listeners, what is that and what's involved in it? And then we'll talk a little bit about the work you guys do to help a company through that process.
Yeah, sure. Well, I would like to describe NICE as the JD Power to our healthcare system. So you have your JD Power reports tell you, you know, which washing machine to buy, which car to buy, etc. And we have the same system, and they are a sort of arm's length body in the UK. And their job is to primarily, if it's a new treatment, so if you're sticking balloons up noses and inflating them, or you're using a sonic wave to treat kidney cancer, if it's a new thing that's not been done before, that they look very closely at the safety and efficacy of new treatments at one side of the scale. And at the other side of the scale, they're there to promote great technologies that offer benefits to patients, care providers, hospitals, and payers. And so they offer an enormous opportunity and have been instrumental in helping a number of Minneapolis Medical Alley-based companies in gaining and securing reimbursement in other countries, in particular the US, with some of the payers there, like Blue Cross, Blue Shield, and Anthem. So the effects of a positive NICE evaluation go far beyond our small island here. So their job, as I say, is the JD Power to the healthcare system, and they're on the lookout for technologies to promote them and to promote their use across the whole of the UK healthcare system.
Oh, it's very good. And you said something really interesting there about NICE decisions helping in the US. When we talk to our members, Getting reimbursement is one of their constant challenges, one of their biggest pressure points. Can you expand on that a little bit? Like, how does getting NICE coverage help you on the US side of the pond?
I think that NICE have been around for over 20 years now, and they are highly respected as one of the world's leading HTA. And obviously everything we do is in English language. I believe, and I know from people that worked with us that have said, look, when we get NICE coverage, it's helped to gain reimbursement with payers in the US and other countries as well, particularly the Commonwealth countries that look closely at what they do. So the question is, does NICE get reimbursement? I mean, that's a really, really interesting question as to what their role is, because generally speaking, within our coding system, so we basically have a system that reimburses treatments and procedures. And within the cost of those episodes of care, there's an expectation that the costs cover the cost of the devices and the consumables and the doctor's time and length of stay and bed days, et cetera. So generally speaking, we offer a really flexible reimbursement system whereby a lot of the time we can find that we can get new treatments covered under existing codes. Because unlike other countries in the world that do device-specific reimbursement, where you get a device-specific reimbursement code, a bit like Australia, you don't have to wait for that. And we can generally find codes that cover treatments that are quite generic or, that would cover the description legally and properly. And then when you take into account that our healthcare system is publicly funded, which means that, if you go up to a New York fireman and say, can you give me a business card? And they'll frown at you and think, well, hang on, why would you want, I don't carry a business card. I work for the New York Fire Brigade, and then you ask them how many fires they put out and whether they earn more money when they put more fires out. That's an NHS doctor. They're paid by the government. Doesn't matter how many treatments they do, how many operations and patients they treat, they get paid a salary. So there's not a driver for a doctor to do more treatments, to use specific bits of kit for his own personal gain in our healthcare system, because they're publicly employed people. So it's a very different methodology to the US, where companies encourage doctors to do treatments, to add on other treatments so that the doctor and the hospital earn more money and get more money from. So it's a very different system to that. So we offer a really flexible and open platform for the introduction of new technologies without waiting for new codes.
Oh, that's really helpful to know. And maybe let's talk a bit more about the NHS in general and kind of how that system works. Expand a bit on how the NHS works at a high level. And then if you would talk about, I know you guys have a claims data database that you work on, and how do you use that in support of, say, a company that's looking to enter the UK market?
Yeah, sure. So the two parts of that, how does the NHS system work? We're going back to really the fundamentals of how it's funded. So it's publicly funded. Most people, everybody's covered in the country. So you live here and you're a citizen, you have the NHS coverage. So there's no plans, you don't have to pay into a specific plan like you do with insurance. So it's funded through taxpayers' money. If you wanted to fill your 3 Series BMW gas in the US, it would probably cost, I don't know, $50. It might have gone up, I'm not sure. Over here, it would probably cost something in the region of $100 to $110 to fill that tank. So we get taxed in different ways to fund things like the health service. So it's funded centrally, and then you have regional payers that look after specific populations, and they were called clinical commissioning groups, but let's just use that terminology for simplicity. So there's regional payers that pay providers, and those providers are NHS hospitals. So that's the way the money filters down into the system. So going to your second point, Frank, about the claims data. So We have a publicly funded healthcare system. In England, there's 55 million lives or so. There's about another 10 million within Ireland, Scotland and Wales, which are smaller parts. And they have their own healthcare system. It's still the NHS, but taking that bit aside, bulk of it is in England. And so all of the billing for treatments, if you consider it in that sort of business mind, that when you go into hospital, you get diagnosed with the condition, they work out whether you came in as an emergency or as an elective case, all your diagnosis codes, including the primary diagnosis code, are recorded. Then you have treatments or you get diagnosed, all that's recorded. And at the end of that spell, there's an invoice raised between the provider, the hospital, and the payer. And about 7-8 years ago, we were very fortunate to be able to have access to this, what's known as NHS data, NHS mutual claims data. And that gives us incredible insight into how hospitals treat patients today. So when we get companies coming to us saying we've got a new treatment for glaucoma, or as an example, we can go into the databases and find out not only how the, you know, how many patients have glaucoma, we can also work out what treatments they had. We know what that cost, how many days they waited, what other things are wrong with them. Are they diabetic? Are they, you know, do they have other eye problems, et cetera, high blood pressure? You know, we can look deeply into those, and we do it to try and work out in our framework of thought, and that is understanding who needs a device. When you apply a new technology to that population, what's the difference versus the standard of care? And there are sort of principles in helping us to understand and help a company to formulate a value proposition and an offering to help patients in our healthcare system. And at the moment, we've got 4.7 million patients waiting for elective surgery. And it's the biggest waiting list in history for our healthcare system. And we really, really need technology. And so much of it comes out of the Medical Alley region. So, you know, we're up for that. And so having that data can help us to really, truly understand the impact that these great technologies that are grown in the Medical Alley area could bring to our healthcare system.
Oh, that's very helpful to know. And the sort of rationality of being able to access that data, really dive into what's the opportunity, and then use that to build a plan. I have to think, for your work, for your clients' work, for a device company, that just makes, not that it's ever easy, but makes life easier to prepare and to enter the market.
It really does. And it's helped us to, you know, to work out some principles that seem to work, and we haven't changed them for many years now. And those are the principles of market access that we talk about a lot. I mean, they're very different to the principles of marketing, which is product, price, place, promotion, a 1970s rhetoric on how to sell dog food to supermarkets. When it comes down to medical devices that affect people's lives, the performance of a provider of care and the payer of care, it's much more complicated. And when you have the insights that we have in terms of what differences these new technologies can make, that I think you can only get in a couple of countries in the world across the whole of their population. I think the UK and Sweden are the only two countries that offer that. But when you start to work out, you know, the patient benefit. So how does a patient benefit from this technology? How does a care provider, the hospital, benefit from the technology? You know, does it reduce length of stay? Does it improve productivity? Does it, you know, does it make the more profitable? I mean, they are businesses of the UK hospitals, and they're trying to do as much as they can with limited resources. And they have, you know, they've got to get through this huge waiting list, and they're being driven and hard to get through it now. And then for the payer of care, you know, you can really start to model out those long-term costs beyond the time that patient's in hospital, to actually say, well, actually, you know, if you use this patient has this treatment, it's likely that they won't be coming back as a readmission. It's likely they don't come back with an infection. It's likely they don't, in 3 years' time, end up having another operation because it's not durable or it doesn't work. You know, can really track those activities. And we've done some amazing work. I mean, just an example within, say, epilepsy, you know, we're able to find patients that aren't managing epilepsy really well, and they end up on a frequent flyer merry-go-round into the ER every few times a month, right? And we pick out those populations, and we can work out what that costs the provider, well, the patient, obviously, in terms of the life, but the provider and the payer costs. And then that's where we start building a value proposition around a new great technology that could solve that problem and help that patient to live independently. So it's a very fulfilling job, this. And you know, I love technologies, and I get very excited when I come out to Minneapolis and I bump into you, Frank, and you know, we talk about what's going on in Medical Alley, because it's all coming from there. And it's sort of slightly upsetting that we don't have a lot of homegrown stuff going on here with MedTech, but we do certainly have a great environment for helping companies to come here. As we mentioned earlier, you know, we talked about the new regulatory system, which is faster than the Central European one. Now we're out of Europe. And, you know, we have also have this other organization, which is a bit like your NIH we have the NIHR, which is our research part of the NHS that has over £1 billion worth of funding a year that funds studies for companies wanting to prove the devices work in our population. So there's some amazing opportunities for companies to come here and get involved.
Yeah, and I'll say, I know for the medical alley companies, the UK has long been an attractive market for a lot of the reasons you just laid out. And the we think, Medical Alley Association thinks there's more opportunity to bring innovation from here to there, but also to connect with the companies in the UK coming into the US market. So I'm excited for the opportunities. And you mentioned one other pretty significant change that's recently happened. I'm hoping you can expand on that a bit, which is the change in the regulatory schema, where because of Brexit, now the UK has its own approval process. Our members all the time are talking about the challenges of the EU MDR changes. Can you talk just a little bit about what is the CA process looking like, and like how's that going in, you know, kind of the new experience that you're having?
Yeah, so I'm not a regulatory expert. I'm a market access person, but I work really closely with people in that space and experts in that space. And what's become clear recently, more recently, is the fact that the new UKCA process is faster. I believe it's based on what was the old CE mark process, which everybody knows, how to follow that. There is an emphasis, though, on tracking patients longer term following particular treatments, so which is good. So, but overall, my understanding is, and from what I'm seeing in terms of the numbers of inquiries we're getting, plus, I've been talking to a company today that may be pulling out of their decision to even go into Europe because it's so complicated. And there's no clear messages in terms of how long it's going to take them to get clearance for Central European approval. So we're gearing up to be the place for life sciences. I think the whole environment here, not only from the regulatory side, but we offer within our taxation system here, very generous research and development tax credits for companies that do R&D in our country. So when you look at faster CE marking, UKCA is quicker. So great regulatory environment. We're a country interested in innovation and R&D. We have a pretty low corporation tax rate across most of Europe. And, you know, we have the NIH equivalent, which funds research. You know, it's no surprise that we've helped quite a number of companies to set up and incorporate and you know, benefit from those things that the UK has to offer. So that's my pitch on why to come to the UK. And
And I would echo all of that. What we hear from the medical alley companies that have worked with you, that have gone into the UK, is that the opportunity is significant. While nothing's ever easy, the pathways are pretty well defined and manageable, and it's a great market to be in. And I'll add one last thing, which is as we're coming out of the pandemic, we're hearing from our friends at Delta that the daily flights will be returning between MSP and London, which will also make going back and forth a little bit easier. And I can say personally, I'm very much looking forward to that. One final question in closing, which would just be for your advice. If I were a device company and I'm getting to that point, or I think I'm getting to that point of exploring the UK market, what would be your top tips of where I should start or what I should start thinking about to be ready when I start that process?
Well, that's a really good question, Frank. And you know, over the years, we work with, you know, thousands of companies, and we've seen those succeed, and we've sadly seen some fail. But I think the starting point of any venture in any market really is, I stand by these principles of market access. So, you know, how is the technology going to benefit patients? How is that technology going to benefit the way a hospital operates? And all hospitals are under pressure globally now. You know, budgets are hard, you know, we've just had this huge pandemic issue, but, you know, whether it's availability of beds or whether it's just general funding or insurers tightening their belts, right? So how does that technology benefit the hospital? And in our country in particular, we've got a shortage of beds, which is why we shut down a lot of things. You know, Germany has a lot more available beds, but you know, 70% of our treatments are day case or ambulatory or office-based or I think you call outpatient. There's all these different phrases, right? So what we're about here in this country is we want fast ambulatory treatments that use as few resources as possible, gets that patient turned around and out, fit and healthy, back home again where they're safe and with their family. So we're looking for technologies that offer day case if possible, because that again frees up capacity in hospitals. And then the next piece, so we've got patient, provider, payer, benefits. So we're looking at long-term benefits, keeping people out of the ER, better compliance, and we're looking for cost savings in the overall budget. So for a number of technologies that may be more expensive at the front end for the provider, but longer term, they are better for the payer. That's exactly what NICE's job to do, is to show that long-term costs are benefit, you know, the long-term costs of treating somebody with this new treatment are not just, you know, just good for the patient, but good for the healthcare budget. So again, and the last part is think about pricing your device on these principles. And those principles are making sure that do you optimize the price based on the value of the technology to the patient, provider, and payer. And what a lot of companies do, the two things I want to mention is, one, they base the selling price of their device on what they charge the Johns Hopkins University or what they charge in America or in Germany, whatever. So, you know, having a price based on a generic is not really helpful when each healthcare system is different and has different initiatives and funding. So price it based on the benefits. And the second thing is when it comes to conducting research on new technologies. And when you bring new things into our country, all the doctors will be interested in research, but make sure that any research you do, you know, captures economic value, and that you do have a system in place, or you've gone through a process of understanding, making sure that you collect the right evidence so you don't have to do the study again. Because the numbers of companies, Frank, that come meet these charming doctors in wherever, they do a study, then they realize they haven't captured some really important things. You know, do a study for an HTA, don't just do a study for what the doctor wants, right? And that's really important. And another area that I see companies burning cash, and they're only startups, so they only have a limited runway, right? So we do offer a service. We have a contract with NICE actually to offer a service called MedTech Early Technical Assessment, or MetaTool. And this service enables us to take a company through a mini HTA with a trained specialist and give them the answer to say, look, it might be too early, you've missed this evidence, you need to think about this question, you've not got it right yet, come back in 3 months' time or go and do this study. So we can actually reduce the risk of these companies doing the wrong studies and reducing the risk of them to go to NICE too early or hit the market too early. So we offer a whole range of things besides the sort of data provision and other things here. So that would be my advice. Big answer to your question, Frank, but there you go.
A great answer to the question and a great place to wrap it up. This was fantastic. Super informative. I really appreciate you sharing your insights and spending time with the Medical Alley community today and as you have for many years.
Thanks, Frank. It's been an absolute pleasure working with you guys. And we look forward to welcoming you on that Delta flight into London sometime when you're back over. And let's hope the world opens up a bit. We've done a great job here with the vaccination program like you guys. So hopefully soon.
Indeed. I look forward to it. And that, folks, is the Medical Alley podcast. Thank you for joining us again today. Make sure to subscribe and view them at medicalalleypodcast.org and on all your favorite places to find podcasts. Have a great day.